Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Wednesday, January 30th, 2019. Coming up this hour.
Apple shares rally despite the first holiday sales decline since 2001.
U.S.-China trade talks get underway amid new signs of Beijing's slowing economy.
Theresa May heads to Brussels to renegotiate Brexit.
Wall Street awaits earnings from Facebook and a decision from the Fed.
President Trump's own national security team undercut his claims about progress on North Korea and Islamic State. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower. Tight game in Brooklyn. The Nets pulled out a win over Chicago. And close at the Garden, the Flyers won 1-0 over the Rangers.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. futures are gaining on the heels of a mixed session in Europe and in Asia. It is 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are up 7 points this morning. Dow futures up 75. NASDAQ futures up 52. The DAX in Germany is down about 0.25%, while the CAC in Paris is up 0.5%, and the FTSE 100 is up 0.9%. Nikkei 225 in Japan down 0.5%. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong gained 0.4%. 10-year Treasury down 2/32, yield 2.71%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.57%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.2% or 11 cents to $53.42 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.25% or $3.60 to $13.18.80 an ounce. The euro, $1.1432, and the yen, 109.36. Nathan.
Karen, shares of Apple are gaining this morning, even as holiday sales declined for the first time since 2001. And we're hearing one common refrain from analysts like John Butler with Bloomberg Intelligence. It could have been much worse.
You know, they're sort of coming in at the low end of the range in terms of their outlook. But this is a year of transition for Apple in the sense that they are up against very tough iPhone comps from the year ago quarter. So I look at an outlook like this and I think, not so bad. You know, it really could have been worse, honestly.
Now, revenue from iPhones tumbled 15% while Apple posted solid growth in its services business. The results have shares up about 5% in early trading. Robert Mayer is president of Semiconductor Advisors.
I think the stock's moving here in somewhat of a relief rally where the results aren't as bad as they could have otherwise been. I think we're seeing that out of some of the chip stocks as well.
Now, one of those chip stocks is AMD. Its shares are up nearly 8% in early trading. The second largest maker of computer processors reported profit in line with estimates and gave a rosy outlook for 2019.
Up next on the earnings front, results from 27 companies in the S&P 500, including Facebook. Sarah Fryer reports from the Bloomberg 960 newsroom in San Francisco.
Most of the growth, I think, we'll probably still see from the main Facebook app, which is continuing to grow in emerging markets, despite the controversies here in the U.S. What we'll be wanting to see, though, is whether those main markets have really reached a saturation point in terms of users.
In addition to Facebook, we get results today from Microsoft, Visa, and Tesla.
And also on the schedule, a policy decision from the Federal Reserve. Here with details is Bloomberg's Michael McKee.
It's the same old question on Fed Day. What will Jay say? The Fed isn't going to move interest rates, nor are there new forecasts or a new dot plot. For investors, it's all about the chairman's news conference, now happening after every meeting. Will Powell tilt more hawkish or dovish, or hew to the data-dependent policy language he's recently used? And given he'll likely face more pointed questions on the balance sheet, does he hint at any decisions on what Fed officials think the final level should be and when they think they might get there? Michael McKee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Michael, thank you. Also in Washington today, trade talks between the U.S. and China begin. We get a preview from Bloomberg's Tom McKenzie.
The U.S. knows China's primary aim for these talks is the removal of tariffs. It's prepared to put that on the table if China commits to major changes to its economy. So far, China has only offered to tinker at the edges while pledging to buy billions of dollars of U.S. goods. But faced with a slowing economy, Beijing is under pressure to strike a deal. In Beijing, Tom McKenzie, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Tom. And we're seeing new signs of that slowing economy in China, with at least 20 companies cutting earnings forecasts today. Among them, China Life Insurance, telling investors full-year figures will fall well short of expectations. Stephen Lam covers the company for Bloomberg Intelligence.
To put it into perspective, last year, the OED came out and said, okay, our earnings are going to be down like 20 or 30% or so. We were actually expecting a full-year decline of between 30 to 50, but it came out with 50 to 70.
More bleak forecasts are likely before a Thursday deadline when Chinese companies have to report any expected substantial changes in financial results.
Nissan Motors also reporting a slide in sales, its first in nearly a decade. Global deliveries fell 2.8% last year, adding to challenges for Nissan following the arrest of Carlos Ghosn. And now the former chairman is speaking out against his arrest. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with the details. Good morning, John.
Yeah, Karen, it's the first interview since his arrest. Carlos Ghosn tells Japan's Nikkei newspapers arrest for alleged financial crimes was the result of a plot by Nissan executives trying to prevent the Japanese carmaker's deeper integration with Renault, essentially a coup. Nissan has long been unhappy about what it considers to be an outsized French role in the alliance. Renault owns about 43% with Nissan voting rights, with Nissan a 15% non-voting stake in Renault. A Nissan spokesman refutes the notion of a coup. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. In the UK, Prime Minister Theresa May has won backing from Parliament to reopen Brexit talks with the European Union. She now heads back to Brussels to face EU members who've already warned they won't consider her demands. Heather Conley is Senior Vice President at CSIS.
I mean, this is really, I fear, just going to lose time. And at 59 days and counting, time is not what the UK has. Theresa May will go back to Brussels, ask them to reopen the withdrawal treaty. They're not going to do that. And then we come back and say, now what?
May says she'll bring a deal back to Parliament by February 13th. And the pound is stronger this morning, trading at $1.3115.
And in France, we have word that Société Générale is planning job cuts. Bloomberg News has learned the bank is looking to trim expenses by at least $114 million annually, with cuts focused on its global banking and investor solutions unit. The plans, including the extent of the reductions, may be made public as soon as next week. And this is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. It is 5:07 on Wall Street. Time to get the latest world and national news from Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
Thank you very much, Nathan. President Trump's own national security team undercut his claims on major foreign policy issues, including North Korea and Islamic State. Top aides to President Trump sat before a Senate committee yesterday and conceded that North Korea remains a critical security threat. Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats says North Korea is unlikely to give up its nuclear capabilities. Coats also talked about Russian interference in other countries' political systems.
At a meeting with NATO intelligence officials, the question was raised by the director, did any of the 29 countries of Europe not see Russian influence in their countries and particularly in the political processes of those countries? Not one person raised their hand.
The deep freeze that's prompting dire warnings to stay indoors from the upper Midwest to the Northeast is expected to strain power grids. The National Weather Service says the cold in Chicago will rival Antarctica. The tri-state area is preparing for a deep freeze. Bloomberg meteorologist Rob Carolyn has the latest.
Michael, we've got a shot of cold weather headed towards the tri-state area. It's going to be rather chilly between today and Friday. Good news is temperatures should moderate quite a bit over the weekend. The other good news, it's not going to be as cold as it was on MLK Jr. Day. That day we were really chilly. Temperatures will be running about 5 to 10 degrees warmer tomorrow than they did last on the 21st. High pressure in the upper plains, that's what's sending a piece of cold weather our way. It'll drift through the area the next 72 hours, and as it moves offshore, we warm up through the weekend. Michael?
Thank you, Rob. Capitol Hill negotiators officially kick off talks on a Homeland Security spending bill that has been trapped in a stalemate over a border wall wanted by President Trump. Meanwhile, a group of about 20 freshman Democrats of Congress introduced a bill to end government shutdowns for good. It's called SEAS, or the Shutdown to End All Shutdowns. Michigan Representative Alyssa Slotkin.
A number of us were hearing very loudly from our districts when we went home. Why is it that government shutdowns are a tool that our government can use when they can't agree?
Former Georgia gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams will deliver the Democrats' response to President Trump's State of the Union address next week.
Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. It's 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with John Stashar.
Nathan, close game at the Garden last night and a tight one in Brooklyn as well. At the Garden, the Rangers first game back from the All-Star break. The Flyers scored 2 minutes in, and that was it. Philadelphia over the Blue Shirts, 1-0. The Rangers coach, David Quinn.
You know, you can't start the game off that way and give up 5 scoring chances in one sequence and expect to survive that. You get 1-0 2 minutes into the game, but another one the rest of the game, you feel like your chances are going to be pretty good. You're going to win the hockey game, and we just weren't able to capitalize on our chances. You know, our power play, I thought, was really good. Had some great looks and just didn't cash in.
Flyers' fifth win in a row. It ends the Rangers' 3-game winning streak. A night after the Nets' 6-game win streak came to an end in Boston, a 122-117 win over Chicago, a team that has now lost 14-15. Damari Carroll says the close games the Nets used to lose, our victory.
I think that's been the biggest thing early on. We were losing a lot of games early on, but I think give credit to Kenny and the coaching staff and, a lot of film sessions. And these guys are learning. We're growing every day, and we just got to continue to keep growing.
Nets have won their last night at Barclays. New Orleans playing without the still injured Anthony Davis, who just announced a trade demand, with a road win at Houston. James Harden, 37 points in the loss. He finishes January averaging 44 points per game in the month. The Davis trade demand has cost him. He was fined $50,000 by the NBA. Sandy Alderson, no longer the general manager of the Mets, going back to where he built the World Series winner, hired as a front office consultant by the Oakland A's. For the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. You know, it might cost a lot to see the Super Bowl in person, but eating there won't set you back so much. The big game will be played in Atlanta's Mercedes-Benz Stadium, the first facility with so-called fan-first concession pricing. Means a slice of pizza goes for $3. Hot dog, pretzel, popcorn, $2 a pop. For that same price, you can wash it down with a bottle of water or soft drink with free refills. Futures pointed higher. This is Daybreak. It's coming up on 5:12 on Wall Street. Straight ahead, we take a close look at Apple's holiday quarter earnings and the outlook for the iPhone maker. Gene Munster, co-founder of Loop Ventures, joins us straight ahead. This is Bloomberg.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Stocks across the world holding firm as investors grapple with a wall of catalysts from trade talks and the Fed meeting to a slew of corporate earnings. The pound halting a 2-day decline and UK shares gaining after lawmakers voted to renegotiate Brexit. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are higher, up 5 points. Dow futures up 63. NASDAQ futures up 47. The FTSE 100 is up 0.9%. 10-year Treasury down 3/32, yield 2.72%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.57%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.33%, up 19 cents to $53.51 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.2% or $2.90 to $13.18.10 an ounce. The euro, $1.14.30. The British pound, $1.31.08. And the yen, 109.36. Today we are watching for a look at private payrolls from the ADP Research Institute at 8:15 Wall Street time. At 10, it's pending home sales. And then at 2, we get the Fed interest rate decision. And about 27 companies in the S&P 500 are scheduled to report earnings today. They include McDonald's, Microsoft, and Facebook. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Karen. President Trump's biggest claims on key foreign policy issues from North Korea to Islamic State were undercut by his own national security team. The president's spy chief, as well as top officials from the CIA, Defense Intelligence Agency, and FBI, sat before a Senate committee and conceded that North Korea and Islamic State remain critical security threats to the U.S., even as the president contends that progress has been made in getting Kim Jong-un to disarm and in eradicating the extremist group in Syria. Bone-chilling Arctic air not felt in the Midwest for decades is descending on areas like Chicago. A wind chill of 50 below zero is forecast for tomorrow in the Windy City. In the NBA, the Nets won, the Wizards lost. In the NHL, the Rangers lost along with the Bruins.
Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thank you. It is 519 on Wall Street. Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak with earnings in focus this morning. Let's get more on Apple's results. Gene Munster joins us. He's co-founder of Loop Ventures. Nice to talk with you this morning, Gene. Just taking a quick look here, the iPhone maker reported its first holiday quarter sales decline in 18 years, while services set a new record. What's your read?
Yeah, the March outlook wasn't as bad as many had feared, Nathan. That was the real catalyst here. As you said, services up 19%, very stable, which is encouraging for investors.
Did CEO Tim Cook set expectations low in order to, I guess, set the plate for analysts? Gene?
Nathan, can you repeat that, please?
Sure. Did CEO Tim Cook sort of keep expectations low to give analysts the results they were looking for here?
Absolutely. That was the key, is Apple does not want to miss the March quarter. And so by guiding essentially in line with the street, I think that was very positive in terms of how investors should think about the outlook for March.
Now, in terms of the services business, is there a concern that if there isn't enough growth in the devices sector, that there aren't going to be enough devices on which Apple can offer those services that it's focusing on going forward here?
That's exactly right. The key here is that, is the health of the iPhone, is the iPhone franchise intact? And I think one of the most enlightening, encouraging parts about the results and the guidance is that that base of iPhones is expanding. They had 1.4 billion active iPhones. That's up 9%, active total devices. It's up 7% year over year. And the important aspect about that, as you said, is that growing base of devices is more potential opportunities to sell services. So as an investor who's thinking about the opportunity here, I think that that probably was most encouraging.
Now, in terms of the devices that Apple offers, is it offering a broad enough portfolio at this point, not just for iPhone, but, you know, iPad, Apple Watch, and that sort of thing?
It is, Nathan, and specifically is that the wearables component, so that was about 12% of total revenue. That wearables piece is growing much faster than the overall business. That's growing at about 30% year over year. And so if you just step back and think about the Apple story more broadly, what you have here is an iPhone business which is really not doing well. It's down about 16% year over year. But the other kind of two-thirds of the business is growing rapidly, call it greater than 20%. And I think that the encouraging part is that that two-thirds segment still is open-ended in terms of how that can continue to grow. And separately, I think as investors think about the Apple story more broadly over the next couple of years, is that even though the iPhone has been a difficult patch here in the December quarter and the outlook for the first few quarters of this year, the iPhone opportunity, I think, remains optimistic, in particular around what's going to happen with 5G. That is going to be a massive upgrade, and I think that you're going to see really growth not only in the wearables and other segments, but growth returning to the iPhone starting next year.
Will it be enough growth to get more people to buy iPhones? Will it be as big a splash as iPhone upgrades have made in the past, do you think?
The 5G is going to be massive. It's hard to really understate the significance of 5G. Think of it this way, is that the speeds of your download are going to be somewhere between 10 and 100 times faster, virtually instantaneous. This is going to be the biggest upgrade really since the iPhone came out. And so I think that right now we're in this period where there's a lot of negativity around China. It's hard, I think, for investors to think about this next coming wave around 5G, but it is extremely encouraging. I just want to give one heads up, though, too, is that Samsung is going to beat Apple to the punch. They're going to have a 5G-enabled phone well ahead of the iPhone. That's not going to come out, the iPhone 5G, until 2020. But don't be discouraged by that. The 5G coverage really won't start until 2020. But I see, despite the difficulties that Apple has had, this is a very encouraging outlook over the next couple of years.
And looking at Apple in the pre-market, shares up about 5.5%. Gene Munster, co-founder of Loop Ventures, thanks again for being with us on Bloomberg Daybreak. And taking a broader look at the futures, S&P up 6 points, Dow futures ahead by 73, NASDAQ futures up 52 points. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Daybreak is brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit SectorSPDRS.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991. To Boston. Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco. Bloomberg 960. To the country. Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are rising following Apple's earnings and ahead of today's Fed decision and U.S.-China trade talks.
As for Apple, the stock's up more than 5% in early trading, despite reporting its first holiday quarter sales decline since 2001. We get more from Emily Chang in the Bloomberg 960 newsroom in San Francisco.
It didn't get much better for Apple, but it also didn't get much worse. The latest quarterly earnings for the iPhone maker suggest the company has begun to stabilize after a punishing end to 2018. Apple sales slightly beat expectations globally, but revenue fell 27% in Greater China. And iPhone revenue declined overall 15%. In San Francisco, I'm Emily Chang, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Emily, thank you. Shares of Advanced Micro Devices are up more than 8%. The second largest maker of computer processors gave a rosy outlook for 2019 revenue.
And the earnings roll on today. 27 companies in the S&P 500 are reporting, including Boeing, Microsoft, and Facebook. We get more on the social media company from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
Analyst expectations for the social network are relatively conservative, and Bloomberg Intelligence says Facebook is likely to exceed the forecast. But ad pricing could be pressured because most of the recent impression growth will have come from regions with lower pricing. Currency is another headwind. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Jeff, thank you. Investors will also be waiting for the Fed's first interest rate decision of the year. That story from Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice.
Futures imply the central bank is on hold. The Fed raised rates 4 times in 2018 and has signaled it will pause to assess its strategy. Looking ahead, a Bloomberg survey of economists indicates the Fed isn't done raising rates. They see 2 more moves, June and December, to keep inflation in check. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Vinny, thank you. Now, on the Brexit front, Prime Minister Theresa May is set to renegotiate her deal with the European Union, but the EU saying not so fast. The House of Commons backed May's proposal to reopen the divorce agreement, but EU officials warned they won't consider her demands.
Now let's get you up to date on how stocks are faring. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 5 points this morning. Dow futures up 65. NASDAQ futures up 48. The DAX in Germany is down 0.4%, while the FTSE 100 is up 1%. 10-year Treasury down 3/32, yield 2.72%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.57%. And NYMEX crude oil is up 0.5% or 25 cents to $53.54 a barrel. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. It is 5:33 on Wall Street. Let's find out what's going on in the world. Here's Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
Thank you very much, Nathan. President Donald Trump's claims on key foreign policy issues were undercut by his own national security team. Trump's spy chief, as well as top officials from the CIA, Defense Intelligence Agency, and FBI, sat before a Senate committee. They conceded that North Korea and Islamic State remain critical security threats to the U.S., even as the president contends that there is progress. National Intelligence Director Dan Coats on North Korea.
We currently assess that North Korea will seek to retain its WMD capabilities and is unlikely to completely give up its nuclear weapons and production capabilities.
Coates says North Korean leader Kim Jong-un views nuclear arms as critical to the regime's survival. A House Senate Conference Committee convenes today to negotiate Homeland Security spending for the rest of the fiscal year and the future of border security. Bloomberg's Bob Moon recaps the various positions.
He says he'll compromise by calling it a border barrier, but President Trump also tweeted over the weekend, "Does anybody really think I won't build a wall?" House Democratic Caucus Chairman Hakeem Jeffries will only go as far as a fence.
We are willing to support fencing where it makes sense.
But will Trump sign the kind of pared-down deal leaders of both parties are setting their sights on? Democratic Senator Mark Warner says it's not productive holding a shutdown over their heads.
Running government via shutdown, brinkmanship must come to an end.
Republicans Senator Lindsey Graham is giving the talks a chance, but still thinks Trump can go around Congress by declaring an emergency.
One way or the other, we're going to start securing the border.
Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
A deadly Arctic deep freeze has gripped the Midwest, forcing widespread closures of schools, businesses, and government offices. And finally, Hotlanta, my pass. Ahead of the Super Bowl this weekend, temperatures in Atlanta are in the brisk 30s for a second straight day. Bloomberg's Janet Wu reports.
The mere threat of snow and freezing rain caused Atlanta schools to be canceled Tuesday. No school led to bigger crowds at Super Bowl events near Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I spoke with one teacher who brought her own kids out to play football.
Well, it's a typical Atlanta snow day. No snow on the ground.
So for that reason, this is going to be even more crowded with kids.
I know. Hopefully there will be a lot of kids. Maybe I'll even see some of my students from my school.
More than a million people are expected to attend Super Bowl-related events leading up to Sunday's game. Reporting from Super Bowl 53 in Atlanta, Janet Wu, Bloomberg Radio.
Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
So much for Hotlanta. Thank you, Michael. Coming up on 5:36 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with John Stanshauer.
Nathan, the Nets keep winning the games they should win. It was close at Barclays against lowly Chicago. Losers of now 14 and 15, but Brooklyn pulled it out 122-117. D'Angelo Russell with 30 points. Shabazz Napier hit 5 3-pointers, scored 24 in 25 minutes off the bench. The Nets have won 7 of 8, 9 in a row at home. The Lakers lost to Philadelphia. They are 6-11 without LeBron James, who, word is, may return to the lineup tomorrow. At the Garden, the Flyers scored a minute 40 in. That was it. 1-0 win over the Rangers. 38 saves and goal for Philadelphia's 6'6" New Jersey native Anthony Stolarz. From baseball, ex-Met, ex-Yankee Neil Walker signed with Miami. The Phillies have signed former star Jimmy Rollins to work in the front office. The A's have signed as an advisor Sandy Alderson, their former GM. He just completed 8 years with the Mets. NFL, the Giants released defensive lineman Connor Barwin. Can Tom Brady win a Super Bowl at the age of 41? He is 17 years older than Rams quarterback Jared Goff. He's 7 years older than the Rams head coach Sean McVay.
The older you get, you know, the fewer chances you're going to have. And when I was a young player, everything happened so quick. I didn't realize how much you struggle when you don't make it. Because, you know, I went to college and we won a lot in college. And went to 2 bowl games and we won. And then we got to the Patriots, and I started playing, and we were winning. So in some ways, I don't think you take it for granted, but you don't appreciate how challenging it is.
Sunday in Atlanta, Brady's 9th Super Bowl, his 2nd chance to be the first to win 6. Remember last year, the Pats lost, but Brady threw for over 500 yards. For the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stanshauer. Nathan?
Thank you, John. It's 5:37 on Wall Street. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now. The cover is on the best government shutdown ever. Also in this week's issue, how the U.S. could lose the tech Cold War with China. Andrew Brown wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
There are people now who are saying, you know, the new Soviet Union is China. It's not just a geostrategic competitor. Dust off the old playbook and see if it works or not. And what I'm saying is this would be a terrible mistake.
And you can read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now. And listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio. 5:38 on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report from Bloomberg's Ed Khoury. Good morning, Ed.
Morning, Nathan. Mayor Bill de Blasio has saved public hospitals from bankruptcy by steering New Yorkers away from emergency rooms and into managed care clinics. But some experts tell Bloomberg the system's cost and scheduled federal Medicaid cuts could negate any savings from the NYC Health and Hospitals program. A push in New Jersey to raise the minimum wage to $15 by 2024 could wind up hurting some of the people the plan's meant to help. NJ Spotlight says it could boost the income of some workers high enough to make them ineligible for free or subsidized services like child care and preschool. Well, the leaders of Connecticut's two federally recognized tribes have tried to assure state lawmakers they're committed to opening their Tribal Winds Casino near the Massachusetts border. Despite delays in obtaining federal approval, tribal leaders say they've spent about $14 million so far in the project. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
Thanks, Ed. It's 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team to get some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KTRH in Houston. Apple is being sued by a Texas lawyer over the FaceTime bug.
I'm Andrew O'Day on WBZ in Boston. I'm reporting on the unveiling of Roomba maker iRobot's new contraption that automatically mows your lawn.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and on WBBM in Chicago, we're talking about how the brutal deep freeze is affecting local businesses.
I'm Marcus Carlson on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're following the wrangling over Brexit as confidence among UK employers drops.
I'm Steve Potosk, and on KYW in Philadelphia, I'm watching the quarterly report from locally based industrial Finnish company Exalta Coating Systems.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting Volkswagen has retained the global top spot in auto sales.
Those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Other stories, Carlos Ghosn says he's the victim of a plot by Nissan executives. The former Nissan chair has been in a Tokyo jail since November on allegations of financial misconduct. He tells the Nikkei newspaper Nissan executives were trying to prevent the carmaker's deeper integration with Renault. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Marks Paneth LLP. Marks Paneth Tax Advisors have helped family businesses reach their financial goals for over 100 years. At Marks Paneth, success is personal. Learn more at markspaneth.com/tax.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Stocks around the world are holding firm as investors grapple with a wall of catalysts from trade talks and the Fed meeting to a slew of corporate earnings. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 5.5 points, Dow futures up 69, and NASDAQ futures up 50. The DAX in Germany is down 0.4%, while the FTSE 100 is up 1%. 10-year Treasury down 3/32, yield 2.72%, yield on the 2-year 2.57%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.5% or 25 cents to $53.56 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.2% or $2.80 to $13.18 an ounce. The euro, $1.1433, the yen 109.38. And today we are watching for a look at private payrolls from the ADP Research Institute out at 8:15 Wall Street time. At 10, it's pending home sales. And at 2, we get the Fed's interest rate decision. And 27 companies in the S&P 500 are scheduled to report earnings today. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, President Trump says progress is being made on North Korea and getting the Islamic State out of Syria. However, those claims were undercut by his own national security team. Top officials from the CIA, Defense Intelligence Agency, and other top aides told a Senate committee yesterday that North Korea and Islamic State remain critical security threats to the U.S. Walkouts are planned today in Venezuela, a day after opposition leader Juan Guaido was barred from leaving the country while under investigation for anti-government activities. The man challenging President Nicolas Maduro's claim to the presidency is urging Venezuelans to step outside their homes and workplaces for 2 hours beginning at noon. In the NBA, the Nets won, the Wizards lost. In the NHL, the Rangers lost along with the Bruins. Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios, where it's 5:49 on Wall Street. Time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our platform offering informed perspectives on a range of global topics and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news. And we're joined live now by Jennifer Ryan, Bloomberg Opinion Editor, in our London bureau where Brexit drama goes on. Jen, Therese Raphael is writing again about all the debate we saw in the House of Commons yesterday. 6 hours of debate last night, 7 votes. And when last we spoke, Therese was saying get ready for 10 more years of Brexit uncertainty. Are we any more certain this morning?
We are not. We have not seen a crowning achievement for Prime Minister May last night. And in fact, the one demand that the majority actually voted in favor of, which was an alternative to the hated provision of May's Brexit deal, which guarantees an open border in Ireland, you know, that's one that the EU has really said in more languages and in more ways that it is reasonable to count that it won't accept. So May is not naive to think that the EU is all of a sudden going to roll over on this position. But what she's doing, Raphael says here, is playing for time and delaying her moment of reckoning and is buying the party more breathing room to decide what form of Brexit it really wants.
All right. So what's the lay of the land among lawmakers at this point?
Well, as ever, the hardliners are claiming that they're unafraid of a no-deal exit. And what May's hope must be at this point is that they recognize the roots of the Conservative Party and that it stands for pragmatism and business, and that they'll be punished for it absolutely a generation at the very least if a hard Brexit turns out to be an economic disaster. The other worry that the Tory party should see are the dangers from May potentially relying on the Labour Party for her deal, because that could wind up with an agreement that they really might not like. The alternative to this is that it gets thrown to the electorate, and the consequences of that are really pretty much unknowable at this point.
All right, so a lot of alternatives there. What next for Prime Minister May?
Well, back to Brussels she goes to ask one last time for your best, please, your final offer. Can you give me something to bring back to Parliament? But it's not really likely that she's going to get very far, or at least the wholesale change that she's got a mandate to look for. The next step is that on February 14th, Parliament's going to have to vote again. You know, happy Valentine's Day. And the hard Brexiters in her party are really going to have to own the decision. It's going to be time for hardliners like Jacob Rees-Mogg and Boris Johnson to kind of stand up and say exactly what it is they want and what they're willing to accept. And they're going to have to decide between some kind of ideological puritanism and a deal that preserves party unity. I mean, for May, what does this mean? She's managed to keep her deal alive for just a little while longer. And so in the circumstances, that looks like some kind of an achievement.
All right, let's move on from Brexit to something with a little more gleam. Andrea Felstead is focused on LVMH and its, truly spectacular sales results. So does a rising tide lift all luxury boats?
Felstead's message is to not, you know, let's not get ahead of ourselves. LVMH is first to report. So there's a tendency for everyone to think as LVMH goes, so goes the luxury sector. But that's not the safe way to think, because her point is that groups like LVMH and Kering as well have scale and diversification that can help them ride through tough times. I mean, LVMH has not only Louis Vuitton, but Christian Dior and newbies such as Celine. Kering has the ever-popular Gucci, as well as standouts like Balenciaga.
So why are times so tough for luxury?
Well, LVMH said that growth in China accelerated in the first quarter, but really, there's a lot of signs that consumers there are becoming a lot more cautious. We've had a downturn in Swiss watch exports, and then we've got a mixed U.S. retail holiday performance, and that raises questions about the durability of U.S. consumer spending. So if you're a single-name brand, such as Burberry, or perhaps trying to reposition your business, times are going to be a lot tougher for the likes of these companies.
So what's Felstead's advice for them?
Well, if you're looking to at the luxury sector more broadly, you know, you might consider the scope that the big groups such as LVMH have to expand, because if valuations are coming down, that makes potential acquisition targets a lot cheaper. And analysts at Berenberg have estimated that the group has about 25 billion euros that it could potentially spend on deals, and Kering could spend up to 10 billion euros.
All right, Bloomberg Opinion Editor Jennifer Ryan, thanks as always. Read more of these stories at Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg Terminal. Karen.
Nathan, thank you. It's 5:53 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Law Report. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington newsroom.
Steel and aluminum tariffs on Canada and Mexico must be removed by the Trump administration before Congress will approve the new NAFTA. That's according to Kevin Brady, the top Republican on the House Ways and Means Committee. A new study finds the return of supersonic jets to the commercial marketplace at a scale sought by the aviation industry could create severe noise and climate impacts around the world. And the House Oversight Committee is casting a broad net to bring soaring drug costs under control, but a lack of consensus on the issue will make it difficult to find a solution.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
All right, Steve, thank you. Now another legal news. Let's take a closer look at criminal charges against Huawei Technologies, with prosecutors alleging the company stole trade secrets from T-Mobile and committed bank fraud by violating sanctions against doing business with Iran. For more on this story, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to Peter Henning, a professor at Wayne State University Law School.
Peter, this was a sort of coast-to-coast Justice Department action with one indictment in Brooklyn and the other in Seattle. Tell us more about it.
The Seattle indictment is really tied in with a civil case that was filed by T-Mobile related to how they claimed that Huawei stole information, trade secrets, about a robot that they had for testing cell phones. And the indictment goes into a great deal of detail about how the different subterfuges used by Huawei, and then even to make it sound even worse, the company instituted a bonus program to reward employees who stole confidential information. The Justice Department is really putting the focus here on theft of trade secrets and how that was stolen. The indictment in Brooklyn is focused much more on the violation of the American economic sanctions law, which prohibits dealing with companies in Iran. But it's also broader there, too, because it includes bank fraud counts and even a conspiracy to commit money laundering. So they have come out, if you will, guns a-blazing in this case, really putting the pressure on Huawei.
What effect does adding an obstruction of justice charge have here?
It's an interesting question, because I think what the Justice Department really wants to do is to show that not only was Huawei uncooperative, but that it actively tried to thwart the Justice Department's investigations, the grand jury investigation in Seattle and also in Brooklyn. And I wonder whether this might be a precursor to saying that the company itself is operating essentially as a criminal enterprise, that it has gone so far to protect itself that really we have to look at the organization as essentially criminal, which would be a basis to try to seek to revoke perhaps its charters in the United States for its American subsidiary, or ask a court to impose very, very hefty penalties to essentially try to wipe it out in the United States. That'll be interesting to see how far the Justice Department wants to push this.
And that's Peter Henning, professor at Wayne State University Law School, speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio, and find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. And futures this morning are moving higher. S&P futures are up 7 points. Dow futures up 79. NASDAQ futures up 54. And the 10-year Treasury down 3/32, yield 2.72%. The euro, $1.1429. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.